You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
I chose this life. And someday, it's going to get me killed. But not today.
Lorraine Broughton, expert in intelligence collection and hand-to-hand combat.
Agent Gascoigne was killed last night. Did you know him?
Enough to say hello.
He had an atomic bomb of information.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is Brandon Cooley.
Hey, everybody.
And this week, we are going to be talking about Atomic Blonde. And not the Emoji Movie. We are definitely not talking about the Emoji Movie and how it's not... and how it's not doing very well with critics and not doing very well with audiences at all. We're not even going to talk about how it dropped during its weekend gross. We're not going to talk about it at all. We're just specifically talking about the movie that came out in fourth place this weekend. So we're definitely not talking about it. What?
Deep down, you want to talk about the Emoji Movie, right?
Yeah, we're not talking about the Emoji Movie. No one, I don't think either you or I saw it, so.
No, but deep down there's some kind of sick curiosity that we all have about how bad it really is, you know. We have to admit that we're all a bit curious.
I mean, there is, but it's like, I'm not rushing out to see it. Like, I'm not,
I don't want to pay money to get it.
Yeah, I mean, I had that curiosity with the Fantastic Four and next week's movie, The Dark Tower, but... I'm not rushing out to see the Emoji Movie, especially since nothing about the premise intrigued me at all. And the thing about the Fantastic Four movie that came out a couple years ago was I was actually intrigued by the premise. I was intrigued by this kind of like body horror Cronenberg kind of take on a comic book movie.
Oh wait, what does Fantastic Four have to do with the...
Oh, it's a movie that's coming out that came out 2 years ago that also dealt with issues. I'm saying like the reason I'm kind of making comparison because it's a movie that not a lot of people were interested in. And of course, when it came out, no one really liked it, much like the Emoji Movie.
Well, yeah, it's a bit different, but yeah, okay.
I mean, it is like the Emoji Movie and I'm just saying like the scenarios are very similar.
Yeah.
So definitely we're not talking about the Emoji Movie at all and how it should have been even lower than its current spot on the weekend estimates. Definitely not, Brandon. And we're definitely not. So with that said, let's talk about Atomic Blonde. So to start things off, for those who don't know, Atomic Blonde is from the co-director of John Wick, David Leitch, and him in his 87 production adapted this graphic novel city, and they changed the name about a few months ago before its South by Southwest premiere, and it had a really good strong word of mouth at South by Southwest. And then as we got more closer and people started to watch it, it became kind of more died down. And I think as I was watching the movie, and Brandon, I'll let you say your piece in just a second. But as I was watching the movie, it's like, yeah, this just isn't as exciting as either John Wick movie. But before I get completely deep into my thoughts and into spoilers, Brandon, what are your like non-spoilery thoughts on the movie?
Yeah, I liked it. I do have some problems with it. It reminded me a lot of the movie Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which came out in 2011, which is also a Cold War era spy movie. It's a spy drama. It's not really an action movie. Has Gary Oldman in it. It has a lot of the same, like, I'm not sure what you'd call it, a lot of the same set pieces, some of the same tone in certain scenes. Like, for example, the room that this movie takes place in most of the time with her being interviewed in the soundproof MI6 room, that appears in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. It's funny, I had the same problems with both movies. The problem with the Soviet era, like Cold War spy dramas, is that there's a lot of, not lingo, but like dialogue that turns into fluff after a while. A lot of, how do I put this the right way? Like, it does a bad job of building up the drama and suspense, I think. That's why I felt, at least for both, for this movie.
So does it, like, for you, does it, like, all of that spy lingo and whatnot, does it just become cliched or just...
Yeah, cliche is a good way to put it. It's not... I mean, they're both good movies, but they suffer from the same problem of just not really building up the... like giving you any reason to really care about what's happening. That's the best way to put it. Like, they both look nice. They have good performances. In this case, this movie has good action, but if these Cold War kind of dramas like this, it's just a lot of, I mean, what were your thoughts on the movie?
I mean, my thoughts on the movie are that the action is very well done and the actors are really good in this movie. Like, everyone is giving a really good performance, even though you're right, the dialogue is very cliched and we've kind of heard these kind of speech or monologues and, you know, kind of like spy lingo, all of this done before, we've heard it before. And so the, you know, screenwriting isn't really that unique. And even the story, like, in between the action set pieces, it's not really as interesting as something like John Wick Chapter 2, where there's like a whole like sub, there's like this whole like, you know, subplot about the rivalry between Common's character and John Wick. Like, there's, you know, there's not those kind of little things. And I'm saying there had to be like rivalries within a movie. I'm just saying, like, there's not anything in the movie to really kind of drive it forward other than like story and just like weird characters like Bill Skarsgård's character. So
I would argue, I'm a huge fan of the two John Wick movies. I would argue they don't really have a story though. It's pretty simple. I mean, in Atomic Blonde, it's more of a...
you just said it. It's a simple story. The John Wick movies work because they're not that overly complex. They're really the... plot is just a plot device to get somebody to kill a bunch of people.
Yeah, that's it. John Wick movies that make those stand apart is the setting and the way they build the world by not showing you much and only like,
or just subtly showing it to you.
Yeah, subtle and very, and through all through like the visuals. With Atomic Blonde, it takes place in 1989, so it's based on a real setting. It's Berlin, but it doesn't have the same kind of attention to detail that John Wick does. Or I guess it probably is, visually it's well done, I'd say that. But what it's lacking though is just a reason to really care about these characters, you know?
Well, there's nothing to these characters because there's barely enough like development for each of them. And when we do get some development, like when we find out that Charlie Theron's, I guess, ex-lover or lover, so to speak, when he dies and she has to go in to basically, you know, finish the, you know, mission that he was on, there is like a personal stake and you have that going into the movie, but it doesn't quite work because
they don't explore it at all.
We don't have, it doesn't really work because we don't have relationship. We don't have that, you know, build that, we don't have any like context to their relationship. I mean, the first time we see like anything of them together, she burns a picture of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're just like, okay, you know, and of course we're not really, and of course the movie, we're not really quite sure we're not quite sure like what's going on, because the movie kind of just starts like, and then this happens, and then 3 weeks later we're here, and then we go back another 3 weeks, and
yeah.
And so it's kind of a poor way to start the movie. I think the better way to have started the movie is if they just went chronological order and kind of skipped that whole interview subplot.
That part didn't bother me. The problem I had is that it was really slow the first half of the movie. Not slow, but there's a lot of fluff. It picked up in the second half, which mm-hmm. started caring about what was happening a bit more. And the other problem too I had is that it is convoluted, and that's fine. Like, I expect that from a spy movie. But at a certain point, though, if you're expecting a twist to happen, it's not really a twist anymore. Like, I kind of guessed the ending halfway through, which we'll get to spoilers in a second. But I didn't really predict the whole ending of the movie. But at a certain point, though, you just expect something to be, you know, they tell her not to trust anybody in Berlin. And it's like, and when you have that kind of movie, you're not surprised by anything by that point. You know, it's just, they kind of all unloaded on you, and it's not really that effective at a.
Yeah, that's the thing, is we know to not trust a lot of the side characters. Like, we know not to trust James McAvoy's character, and to also be weary of Sophia Patella's character and Bill Skarsgård's group of people. We're told to be wary, and the character is. Like, she's not a dumb person and, like, just tells everyone everything. But she doesn't have... But, I mean, it really, it's just, like, it's so cliched. This whole way, like, how the film is done, it's so cliched, and the moving parts are not that interesting, to where when the ending does happen, and we'll get to it in just a minute, you're just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does nothing to you. And that's kind of why I'm sort of, and that's why I'm kind of just like, I don't think David Lee, I don't know if David, and maybe this is because David Leitch, you know, this is like his first like solo outing as a director. You know, David Leitch is, other than John Wick, he's more of a stunt coordinator / stuntman in the film industry. So that's why the action works really well. But when it comes to like the storytelling and all the moving parts, the moving mechanisms that kind of keep the story going, I don't think he quite understands like how to keep it all juggling. Whereas John Wick, Chad Stahelski and David Leitch, and even Chad Stahelski again in John Wick Chapter 2, they knew how to just keep everything simple and straight to the point. Just have it happen and then just move on. And not everything in John Wick in either movie, not everything in those movies work, but the reason why they do work is because they keep it simple and straight to the point, and you're just following Keanu Reeves as he's in this world. And that's where the subtle world building comes in. And then the world of Atomic Blonde, or I guess the world of Lorraine Baha, Bottom, I think that's her name. It's not as interesting because there's not that many characters that are like, that are as interesting as the villain in the first movie, or, you know, there's not a, and I know it's not, and I know it's kind of not fair to judge this movie to John Wick, but this is kind of, but they're both similar stories in that they're both revenge movies, and they're both like trying to build this world in East Berlin as the kind of the, you know, the rebellion is kind of building up to kind of just bring down the wall, and just none of it is interesting. So I feel like I'm a little justified.
Well, I should mention, though, that I did really enjoy this movie. I thought it was very good just from a filmmaking standpoint. And just in terms of movies I've seen recently, the worst 20 minutes of this movie captivated me more than Dunkirk or War for the Planet of the Apes. I mean, I'll take this over a lot of different movies this summer. I mean, because it is visually, it is so well done. And I mean, like, for example, James McAvoy character, while we may not understand his motivations, his performance is definitely interesting to watch. Same thing with...
He's definitely going balls in. He's definitely giving a ballsy performance with this.
Yeah. Action movies. I mean, like, I would say it's not as good as John Wick, obviously, either John Wick movies, but those are are pretty great action movies. I'd say it's probably better or probably just as good as the last two James Bond movies, Spectre and Skyfall, I would say, personally, but yeah.
True. And to mention the cinematography, you're right. This movie is visually beautiful and accompanied by like a really beautiful score. I know you didn't watch Transformers last night, but, but the best thing about Transformers the Last Night is Jonathan Stella's cinematography. It's very, you know, bright and colorful. And he got to use the
trailers looked awful though for that movie. The visuals in the trailer. I mean, that was like,
well, when you're watching, right. But when you watch the movie, there's just these beautiful, like very crisp, you know how Michael Bay likes to like have everything look like it's the sun's going down and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's visually the best Michael Bay Transformers movie we've gotten yet. Yeah. And I have to kind of thank Jonathan Stella because of this and John Wick and this movie, I just feel comfortable saying that Jonathan Stella is a cinematographer to keep an eye out. I mean, his visual work is incredible. And while I know I had a friend of mine, another friend of the show, complained about how the movie was kind of cold or looked cold. I felt like that kind of had to work for the movie because you had to believe you were in East Berlin during winter, and it's really cold up there.
Yeah.
So of course the movie is going to look like it's freezing and it's freezing everywhere and everyone's just not comfortable at all. And they're all like having to snug up next to each other. You're right to praise the look of the movie, the way this movie is visually constructed. And so that's a really good plus. And then what did you think of the music? And this will be the last thing we do before we get into spoilers.
Yeah, it's a good soundtrack. It's period piece. Technically, it's 89, so they're playing the greatest hits of the 1980s in terms of the pop synthesizer music. It was nice. I don't like the hair bands of the 1980s and a lot of the rock songs, but I like that kind of music. So it's always nice to hear that stuff.
Yeah, and I think we hear Hell from Blue Monday first during the scene where her husband, and this is not a spoiler to the trailer, where Lorraine Bottoms' like lover is like killed. We hear that throughout the film or the opening, and then we cut to David Bowie, and it's just a really good like way to open the movie. Like, and there's just stuff like that all throughout, even like conversations between Charlie Theron and Sophia Boutella, like when they're just laying in bed together and there's just like beautiful little, like little bits of beautiful synth music just playing in the background. That's very John Carpenter-esque and a little bit of Tangerine. And it's just like, it's just really good score here by Tyler Bates and lots of great stuff. Even the action, well, actually I don't remember much music playing during the action scenes.
Well,
I think there was one.
Go what? Ahead. Yeah.
I think there was one during what?
No, go ahead.
Okay. I think there was one song that was played during like when the cops are at her lover's house and she like has to like attack them all just to get out, and I think there was one song but I don't remember what it's called. But during the most important action scene in the movie, the stairway chase scene or stairwell scene, really well done. Like there's no music, I don't think there's any music at all, and just the way, and just getting into that, like it's really incredible that there was no music. I really enjoyed that scene.
Later we'll talk about that because that's the highlight of the movie. But I was going to mention though, it's weird because in the trailer we saw a lot before this in different movies, they had a cover of of the song Personal Jesus by Depeche Mode, which is off of their Violator album, which is one of my all-time favorite albums, and that wasn't actually in the movie if I remember right. it's yeah, it's in the trailer, but they don't play it in the movie. I was kind of disappointed by that, but
yeah, it's not in the it's not in the movie, but it is in the trailer that we saw for the last 3 months.
Yeah, it's just kind of weird, but speaking of the trailer, I want to get to something else too about that and spoilers, but yeah, it's a great soundtrack though. It doesn't just I mean, the songs are played in the right moments, you know. It's not just playing for the sake of having, you know, recognizable songs from the 80s. But
so with that said, let's go into spoilers.
Yeah. Well, speaking, since we just discussed the trailer, they've really got to stop showing the final action scenes in movies in the trailer, because for this movie, I knew it was going to have great action scenes, and they showed them all in the trailer pretty much. And so I was kind of checking it off in my head, like the checklist of which scenes were showing up. And when we got to the very end, I realized they hadn't shown the scene with her in the red dress shooting the three guys. And it's like, okay, so I kind of know this is going to be like a twist, kind of like, you know the scene I'm talking about, right?
It literally is the first like thing in the trailer.
Yeah. They've got to stop doing that, because it's kind of, I don't even watch trailers that much. I just see them when I go to the theater, and it's kind of ruining certain movies.
Yeah, and it is really frustrating, because I forgot it was going to happen in the movie. Like, I was like forgetting that scene, and then when it actually happened, I was like, "Oh, great! They showed I know how this is going to play. I know this is where this is going." It's like, even like as it's mentioned in the movie, the real, I guess, quote unquote twist, as I do air quotes, I still was like, yeah, I know where this scene's going. I know who's going to die. And I know that later in the scene, you know, she's going to get on an airplane.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the end of the movie. Like, and it is, it's really frustrating, because you're like, because most of the time, you know, and yes, I did forget like that scene, but most of the time you're just waiting in the movie, just because you just know it and you've seen it multiple times. You're just waiting for that image to pop back up, or that shot to pop back up, and just check it off in your head. So, and going to the trailer, it does. It spoils it shows like pretty much the whole highlight of the movie.
Yeah. I mean, there's not one. It technically doesn't give away anything, but by showing every action scene, every important scene in the movie, you kind of have that, you're checking it off in your head. But anyway, with the actual twist, I got a Kaiser Soze, Usual Suspects kind of vibe with her being interviewed. And halfway through, I kind of predicted that she'd be Satchel, which is sort of how it ends. It has two twists that, the second one kind of works. I like the way it ends, but I mean, what did you think of the two twists it had near the end?
The first one works. It's just, you just are waiting for it to happen. I put it together that James McAvoy is like betraying her the whole time.
Which isn't really that much expected.
Yeah, and it's not that, I mean, the scene, as I mentioned before, with the cops, like, it pretty much indicates that, yeah, he pretty much is just screwing her over and is going to do everything he can to like make it like his mission and keep her out of the way as much as possible. So I pretty much knew from after that scene that he was pretty much the bad guy, and just waiting for the moment when, you know, the tables turn.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, it's revealed as such, and then, you know, and then like Sophia Patella is killed, and it, to be honest, it's in the trailer. Sophia Patella's death is kind of foreshadowed in the trailer.
Yeah, it is.
So, I mean, after that, I just knew like what was going to happen. And then I was actually kind of taken back by the second twist, like, cause I was like, I didn't think the movie was that like clever enough to just throw another twist at us.
Yeah.
Cause really after the interview stuff is over, really the movie could have just ended at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really the story is kind of resolved. You know, you could have just left the theater because I really don't think there was just much more they could resolve. I mean, the movie could have just ended bleakly by having Charlize Theron just being like, yeah, you guys trusted the wrong person and y'all wanted to destroy a watch. And yeah, that list is pretty much out there now because you guys did not trust me. You guys completely, like, that was I could have been happier with that whole ending.
Yeah. And I went to rewrite the script. I probably would have taken the satchel plot line out of it. And because the whole plot of the movie is they're trying to find the list. That's the MacGuffin. Yeah. I would just,
yeah, that's our MacGuffin.
The satchel thing is just an unnecessary kind of complication to the whole idea. I mean, and I would have had the twist at the end that she was working for John Goodman the whole time, and it'd be simple as that. They kind of had to go with one or the other, you know, the satchel twist or the you know, John Goodman CIA kind of a twist at the end.
And I was just, the satchel thing, like, I didn't see it coming, but even when that reveal happened, I was like, okay, whatever. I mean, this movie the whole thing about this movie is it thinks it's, like, super clever and, like, mind-blowingly smart, when really it's just, like, it's every other spy movie ever. So,
well, what this is with this movie is it's like each piece is really great, but they put it in the wrong order. Like, in terms of, like, if it was a puzzle, they put it in the wrong order and it looks, doesn't make any sense if you stand back and look at it. You know, it's like if they were just to rearrange this with the characters and the plot and just, it would make more sense and it would be more engaging, but it's just the way it's written is just not set up the right way.
Yeah, and it's kind of unfortunate because this was kind of supposed to be the film that kind of showcased David Leitch's directing talents, and now it's like...
Well, I still think he's a good director. I think that visually this is very captivating. The problem, though, is the script. Did he write this too?
No, he... Kurt Johnston, who did a rewrite on 300 and Act of Valor... He's just kind of a screenwriter. He's kind of like Zack Snyder's screenwriter that he goes to.
Okay.
Go-to screenwriter, so.
Well, if anything, that's the problem with it. I would even say that David Leitch did a good job with it because he took a mediocre script and made it interesting to watch, at least. He did the best
he did the best job. I mean, he did the best he could, but still, I just hope that going forward with Deadpool 2, I hope that what I hear is there's supposed to be a lot of moving parts too. Like, it's not going to be as simple as the first movie. Deadpool 2 had
a complicated Deadpool movie. I understand that. That's like not, it's kind of odd.
Right. Well, there's a lot of moving parts to Deadpool 2 as well, because there's, you know, new characters and whatnot, and like a huge plot thing, not even a plot twist, just a plot device that's going to kind of shake things up. And for this going, I hope the writers for Deadpool 2, they kind of step up their game and produce another really good script, because I feel like David Leitch needs a really good script to work with in going forward. So I hope they have that order. But as far as this movie's concerned, I still liked it. I mean, the stairway action scene is literally the best part of the movie. It's brutal. It's intense. Yeah. It's in one shot. It's, you know, you can just see, you know, Charlize Theron Lorraine Bonham just struggling the whole way through, and even getting weaker as, you know, as the fight goes on.
Yeah. Well, in most of the action scenes in this movie and in the John Wick movies, the action is very like acrobatic, and it's very like, it's like, I'm not sure what the right word is for it, but in this one though, it's much more realistic. In this stairwell scene, it's much more realistic and it is brutal. I mean, people are like stumbling and like passing out because they've been beaten up so much. I mean, it's like,
and stabbed.
And it's like, Yeah, and I mean, it's all in one take, or it's not all in one take, but they make it seem like that. Like they do a Birdman.
The Birdman thing.
There's a few moments I noticed where they cut. Not like obvious moments, though. It's hard to tell. It reminds me of the Daredevil scenes in the apartment scene in the stairway scene, Daredevil season 2. But it goes for a while and even turns into a chase scene almost near the end. It doesn't cut for a while, but yeah, it's a great action sequence.
Yeah, it's a really good scene, and it has a really hard-hitting finale to it, and it's really good, and I wish there was more. And the other thing I wish, you know, as we get into the third act of the movie, I wish there was a little bit more of just her, of Lorraine Bottom just kind of not breaking down and just, you know, having a meltdown, but just showing some more emotion as like everyone around her and everything about her mission is just going horribly wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Speaking of the guy who dies at the end of that scene, the guy who memorized the list, it's interesting because the 20 minutes where they're trying to get his family out is great. I mean, the second half of the movie gets better, and that's one of the great moments of it. It's funny. The whole movie could have been about her trying to get his family out of Berlin. That could have been the plot of the movie. I mean, I don't understand why they went for such a convoluted plot of her talking to these agents in MI6 and then flashing forward back and forth with James McAvoy being just all the moving parts. I mean, it really could have just been about her getting a family out of Berlin. You know,
I think really everyone just wanted to make a movie where they could say, this is clever. This is, you know, a nuanced spy drama. And really it's just movie. Like it's a mid-budget action movie that comes out in September or February. Like it's not like, and I don't mean it, and I don't mean that in a degrading way, but I mean that in like this is just a movie you put on just to kind of in between like blockbuster seasons.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't mean anything though. I mean, those movies can still be really good. Technically, Jaws came out in February, and it actually came out in March, didn't it? Or I can't remember now. It might have been February or March. It doesn't matter. February and March are known for being like great months for movies, but you know.
But those are where you can get some good blockbusters that'll kind of hold you over till we get to March, and then, you know, and then of course May, and then you're off to the races throughout the summer. And then you got August, September, and October to hold you till the Oscar season / holiday season as well.
Yeah, I don't really care about months. So besides the fact that January is the month, the dumping ground for bad movies, I mean, to me, months don't really matter with movies. I just, they come out when they come out.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, I mean, January will eventually not be a dumping ground anymore because we're just getting like so populated. We're just producing so many blockbusters that it's kind of becoming impossible to kind of make the money back for each project. So, especially as we saw this month with like Spider-Man Homecoming and War for the Planet of the Apes and Dunkirk all just kind of like, cannibalizing each other to the point where they're all kind of on some form of way underperforming. I think Dunkirk is out of all three is like the most successful in what it was attempting to make anyway. So,
this movie out of those three, or make the most money out of those three?
They're not it's not outgrossed those two movies, but in terms of like the budget and what they had spent on it, it'll be like the most profitable of the other three movies.
Okay, good. Because I'm hoping
because
the best deal out of the July movies. Because as you know, how much I'm annoyed by the other two, but
I mean, Spider-Man: Homecoming definitely is like gonna out of this month be the highest grossing movie of this month.
Yeah.
But in terms of like how much Warner Brothers spent on Dunkirk and marketing, it'll do just slightly better than Homecoming.
Okay.
In terms of like how much profit they made.
Gotcha.
Or if any profit. So with that said, before we go, Brandon, would you want to see another movie in this Atomic Blonde world?
Yeah, I would go see another one. I mean, is like I said, I enjoyed it. I mean, I think that it's, if it's by the same person, if it's by a David Leitch, you know, and if it has the same cinematographer, even the same character, because I liked her character in some way. I mean, I think Charlize Theron does a good job. It's just that the script could have been better. Yeah, I'd see a sequel, I think.
That's my advice going forward, is maybe let David Leitch do a couple more movies to kind of get his craft in order, because he's a really good action filmmaker. Like, he knows how to craft action sequences very well. I feel like this and Deadpool, whatever he does next, he needs to kind of hone in his craft a little bit more. Cause I feel like Chad Stahelski kind of found out what he's good at, especially now that he's done 2 John Wick movies. He's found out what he's good at, and it'll probably work, and he'll probably stick to that for the next foreseeable future. And I hope David Leitch in Deadpool 2 and maybe one other movie, he hones in his craft. And then as far as Atomic Blonde, maybe just get another screenwriter. Because I don't think...
Well, I think part of the reason why we're kind of being rough on this movie is because of expectations with John Wick. Because, I mean, really, if I had to compare this with other action movies of the year, I would say it's just as good as Guardians of the Galaxy 2 or Wonder Woman. It's just that we had different expectations for those movies. Like, we had low expectations with Wonder Woman because of the DC movies, then high expectations for these two, Guardians and Atomic Blonde, because of John Wick.
Atomic Blonde?
Yeah. Well, I'm saying high expectations because of the first Guardians movie, and because John Wick was so good. So I think that we're kind of being harsh on Atomic Blonde because of that. But I mean, it's a good summer action movie, I think. So.
All right. So do we have any more final thoughts on Atomic Blonde? And actually, Brandon, what would you give this out of a 5? What would you rate this out of 5?
I would rate it 4 out of 5.
A 5 out of 5?
No, 4 out of 5.
Oh, okay.
One more point. What would you rate it? Just out of curiosity.
I would rate it 3.5 out of 5, just a little lower than you did. Yeah. And the only thing I would say as a final thought is just keep working on, get a better screenwriter. Maybe even get someone like Christopher McQuarrie, or I don't know who wrote the script for Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, but maybe get them to kind of write a better spy story, and then David Leitch can kind of work in the action sequences.
Well, Tinker Tailor as well. Too. I mean, I wouldn't get them to write it. it's a good movie, but it's a flawed script. It's very convoluted. But one quick thing though, have you seen the movie Stalker? The movie they're playing at the theater during one of the fight scenes.
What movie?
It's the Russian movie Stalker. They're playing at the theater. I've been wanting to watch that movie for years now. It looks really interesting. It's a Russian movie from 1979. Let me look it up real quick. But it has, visually, it looks really interesting. But I love the way they had the action scene take place behind the projector, canvas, or what do you call it? Stalker.
Oh, wait.
1979, yeah.
Oh, is this a movie that had a scene similar to? Did they have a theater scene as well?
No, this is in the movie, the Stalker.
Oh,
the,
okay.
The when they're fighting in the theater.
Oh, right, yeah.
By the guy's mouth, they're behind the projector's canvas kind of screen thing. That's the movie they're playing, Stalker. Yeah, it's a really famous movie from cinema. It's one of those on my list I've been meaning to watch, but I was just asking if you'd seen it or not.
No, I haven't. It did come out. However, it's interesting that we bring that up, because that movie came out in 1979, a decade before.
Yeah, yeah.
This movie, but I guess they were just doing a reviewing or something of it, I guess. Maybe you can kind of
I was wondering why they were showing it in the theater. It must be a favorite of David Leitch or something, because it's a science fiction movie, and from what I know of it, it has no connection to it wouldn't have any connection to Atomic Blonde or the characters. And it came out a decade before. I guess maybe the reason why is because there were fewer movies allowed in Berlin at the time. Only certain movies. So maybe that's the reason why, but just as a, that was interesting.
Yeah, that is very interesting. That is. So on that final note, you still don't have any social media connections, right?
No, not really.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna do some plugins. And you can, so on Twitter, folks, that is it for, well, actually, let me say this. That's it for our show, folks. On Twitter, you can find me at Movie Kale, and you can also find me at The Youth Critic, and you can, where you can get updates on this show and also keep up with when this show actually does air on KHD Network, and then also check out KHD Network's Twitter page at KHD Network. This is where I post. This is where we distribute all of our podcasts. And also check us out on KHD Network on iTunes and leave us a comment telling us how we're doing. That is it for our show this week. Brandon, thank you so much for coming on.
Yep, no problem.
And next week we are doing the Dark Tower and Detroit. Maybe we'll get different guest hosts for each segment. I'm still trying to figure out the machinations, but I feel like, and I was going to pass on the Dark Tower because the movie, I don't know that many people that are seeing the Dark Tower. I know a couple people that are seeing Detroit. However, I feel like with the word from Variety coming out today about the production history on the movie and the whole post-production trouble, I felt like we kind of needed to discuss it. So we will talk about the Dark Tower in the Detroit episode. And as far as retrospectives go, we already posted the Night Shift episode from and we had the In the Can podcast hosts come on and talk about that movie. And next week we are going to be doing The World According to Garp. And that's it. That's all Youth Critic stuff. Everyone, thank you for listening. Brandon, thank you for coming on. And that is it for our show this week. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
For thousands of generations, the gunslingers were knights, sworn to protect us from the coming of the dark.
These visions, as you call them.
What do you see?
I see a tower,
a man in black,
and the gunslinger.
They're just dreams. They're not real, Jake.
There's another world out there.
I know there is.
Who are you?
It's you. You're a gunslinger, right?
There are no gunslingers.